So he's obviously covered a large area of facts there, and I'm sure that has generated some questions in your mind. So think about a question to ask, and I'll bring the microphone around, and if you have a question, just raise your hand, and you get a chance to ask it. And while you're thinking of the question, we're going to take a free will offering, if the two folks could come up and help with that. And feel free to contribute to the ministry that we have here. Don't feel compelled, but you're certainly welcome to help us to do that ministry. So we have a few questions here. And let me just bring the microphone around.
Yeah, my question associated with, you're talking about fossils. And the world knows today that we have fossil fuels called petroleum. And I have a serious question about, since we find that in the deepest of the ocean or below sea levels. And the interesting part to me is that petroleum, it's not solvable in water. But vegetation stuff that decomposes is. So is petroleum a fossil fuel?
Well, in the sense that most people would say that most of the petroleum, for example, and coal, it's much clearer in coal because you can see, oftentimes in coal, you can see remnants of the plants that made up the coal. So most people, even creationists, would say that they believe that a lot of the petroleum is as a result of large mats of vegetation that were accumulated during the worldwide flood. However, I'm also aware of some people who believe that petroleum is continuing to be created right along. I'm not at all an expert on petroleum or anything like that. I can say that I've seen quite a few fossils that were formed in coal and have indications that they were made from plants. The one thing I would also say is that there's very unlikely that the Sinclair oil advertisements we saw for so many years are accurate. If you may remember, the Sinclair oil always had the dinosaur on there and aged for millions of years. Well, it's not very likely that there's very little, if any, of the fossil fuel that Sinclair oil sells was as a result of dinosaurs. I would say more likely plant material. But to give you an authoritative answer with regard to, I think, your underlying question that you have, I'm not really an expert on that. There's a book that we sell on our table called Rocks Aren't Clocks by John K. Reed, a professional geologist, a creationist. And he explains a lot about geology from his perspective. And you can email him, and he would be a person that could much better answer this question for you.
Is there any other questions around that you'd like to ask? I know some of these questions that are being asked are covered in some of the answer books, creation answer books, and some of those books are available there. You might look to see if that question is answered.
What was your experience in transitioning from an evolutionist to a creationist? How'd that work?
Okay, well, it worked like this. This is my testimony. I grew up in the church, sang in the choir as a boy, and by the time I was in my 30s, I was involved in church leadership. But as I grew up in the church, I was an analytical type kid, and I was very interested in science and math. I did well in those courses and things. And so I was not able to get any answers from youth pastors or pastors that I had to my questions with regard to origins, for example. Mostly they would like to say things like, well, that's not important, just trust in Jesus. And the other thing I noticed was the church at that time. And so to some extent, even yet today, you'll find that a lot of the kids that are accepted and very active in the youth of the church are not your scientifically oriented type kids. There tends to be more of an acceptance of those with musical ability, ability to converse and get along socially and so forth. And so a lot of us kids that are more introverted, more analytical, we sort of get pushed, or at least my experience was we got pushed out of the church so far as getting answers to the questions we had. And so when I went to university, I had really no use for church. I was in the church, went to university, started out going to be a physicist. All I got was evolution and millions of years. Then I changed to engineering because I found out how esoteric physics was and didn't feel I had the money to go on. I would need to get a PhD if I was going to do anything in physics. And so I transferred to engineering where, at that time, the evolutionary underlying pretty much, it was there, but there was no time for it because you had to learn how to build things that didn't fall down. You know, that was an important thing. You had to build machines that didn't blow up. That was what when we got into engineering. We couldn't sit up in our ivory towers and wonder about, you know, all these things that a lot of the scientists wonder about. Anyway, so my wife and I got married and we started having children, then, oh, let's go back to the church. And I thought, oh, that's a good idea because, like I said, that's where the good people are and we want to have our kids be around good people, right? And so I was one of the leaders of the church and I was I was involved in a Genesis Bible study, and I waxed eloquently for everyone. The pastor was there, a lot of the leaders of the church were there, and I told them in no uncertain terms that I knew that Genesis chapters 1 through 11 were allegory. And no one disputed my assertions in that little bit, or at least that I don't remember that they did. So I walked out of there pretty proud of myself. And this guy, Jim, who was in the class, he walked up to me and he said, J.D., I don't have the education you have. All I do is drive nails for a living. But he said, I got a favor to ask of you. Would you listen to this audio tape? And I said, sure, Jim, I'll listen to your audio tape. And it was an audio tape, a creation science audio tape. And that blew my mind away. I had never heard anything like was in that. And so for the next 20 years, first thing I did was right away, you know, I was born again, and I bowed down and asked for forgiveness for my sins and accepted Jesus as my Lord and Savior, and had a new outlook on what the church was all about. But then I fumed for 20 years I studied all this stuff, and I just couldn't understand why everybody didn't think like I did now, you know. I got it figured out. Why don't you have it figured out? Well, so then in 2004 is when I started Creation Engineering Concepts, my personal ministry. And then in 2005, I founded the Institute for Creation Science in Portland area there. And so that's what I do as a passion. Now, I just recently retired from engineering, so I don't have to worry about having the conflict of having to work anymore. So here I am.
Okay, well, thank you for your testimony, J.D. Okay. That's very helpful. And I don't see any other questions at this point. Is there one back there? Yeah. So let me walk the mic over here. But his testimony shows the importance of us making this information available so kids, you know, don't get caught in that trap.
So one thing you mentioned was that different layers of strata, they'll have theories. They should have kind of formed this one first and then kind of go up or something like that, and that evolution should have the less complicated, you know, forms of life at the bottom or something like that, and the more complicated forms of life at the top. And you've found that there's no pattern or consistency to that necessarily. I was just wondering if you could ascribe a rough percentage to that.
I think I understand your question.
Yeah.
In my experience, I haven't been to every place in the world. Most of my experience is in the United States of America, some in Canada. In other words, that's where I've gone to museums and done some fossil digging and so forth. I continue to see that creationist geologists seem to, and for the most part, agree that there is a general pattern of less complex to more complex. However, in the areas such as the John Day fossil beds of Central Oregon, where I have spent more specific time and more focused time, I find that that's not the case, that the geologic column or the geologic timeline has been placed as a template on the different areas around the John Day fossil beds according to the index fossils that were found by the first paleontologists that got there in the late 1800s and early 1900s. And they haven't bothered to change them since then. That was, you know, once you get the index fossils established, then it's pretty hard to change it. And now, so the 20th century and 21st century paleontologists come in, and what I find is that they have to, of course, like all the other paleontologists, they have to try to take the radiometric methods and all the other methods that have come after the fossil succession methods and try to apply them. The first thing I find is that it doesn't work. It hardly ever works. And so they have to keep falling back to the fossils. The fossils always win. And then in the John Day fossil beds, what I find is that the fossils aren't where they should be. And so what difference does that make? It doesn't really make any difference to them because their faith is so strong that indeed what they're seeing in the sedimentary layers is indication of evolution over millions of years, and that's all that they've been indoctrinated to see. That is what they see. So in the John Day fossil beds at least, and I'm sure there are other places as well, you will find that the animals that are supposed to have evolved, like let's say animal X is supposed to have evolved from animal Y, sometimes you're just as likely to find Y above X is not. And so that would be my point, is why I would say that, is that my way of looking at it with no university education in geology, my way of looking at it is, in Genesis, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, we know that there was this cataclysmic worldwide flood, something that we have no experience. You know, our experience would be so simple-minded compared to what actually happened. And we have guys that are finding out more and more and more every year, but we still don't really understand these processes of the hydraulic processes, the tectonic processes, the volcanic processes. But my expectation, just knowing what it says in Genesis, is that there's no reason why I would expect that just because a particular fossil is found here, that if I go over and find the same fossil over here, that those two piles of rocks were formed in exactly the same way at exactly the same time. That just makes no logic to me, since this is a cataclysmic event with all kinds of things going on that we have a very poor understanding of. And so what I do when I go out and I see these things, all I see is I see flooded areas. You know, I don't see old age. I see a flooded earth. And then when you start looking at it, you can say, well, I think maybe what happened here is thus and so and thus and so. But what you got to realize is that secular and creationist geologists who take the evolutionary geologic timescale and have to slap it on all of these formations all over the world, which they do, if they believe in that, then they are tied down to Charles Lyell's ideas of 1830. and they're not able to move forward 1 year from it. And so this is the position of a person somewhat educated in logic and technical thinking, but with no geology thinking, and seeing that the more geology education that a scientist have, the less of a perspective that he has with regard to understanding exactly what the worldwide flood does. And that's just my opinion. If you were to get somebody else up here with a different background, you might get a different idea. But I highly recommend John K. Reed's book, Rocks Aren't Clocks. And if you read Rocks Aren't Clocks, I think you'll be convinced that geologic time scale is just a mental abstraction. With the sole existence today, one reason that it exists is to prove evolution. If you take the geologic time scale away, evolution falls away. If you take evolution away, the time scale falls away. They're tied